right, welcome to the Chronic Podcast. I'm your host, Ralph Marlboro. It's the end of the week, so that means we are joined, as always, by our fearless leader. Oh, no, Dave's not here, but he is the leader of Canal Street Chronicles and president and vice chairman. But we do have Kevin Held from Akeem Drops the Ball and power ranking contributor on Canal Street Chronicle. Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fine, and we should amend that to just to say part-time power rankings contributor, because the last 2 weeks there, the site has been sans power rankings. It's a little bit because I'm getting really busy at work, and a little bit I'm extraordinarily lazy.
Yeah, Kevin.
And it's hard to find. When you're called up to the big leagues and working on Canal Street Chronicles, there are some limitations. You know, you can't just throw random photos of some latex-clad supermodel.
Why not?
And just throw it up there all willy-nilly. You know, certain photos, you know, you have to have certain credentials for things. You know, you can't just say, oh, I'm just going to grab this random photo of Kate Upton with a popsicle between her cans and post that. You know, you can't do that. I've learned that the hard way.
That's what third down defense is about. No?
Right. Popsicles between your cans.
Dave may or may not join us shortly, but what I want to start with, Kevin.
Well, he's too busy making pressing a cute design on a onesie for his kid, so it's okay.
Look, Dave is all about monetizing the t-shirt. You know, that's Dave's wheelhouse. Look, Kevin, this Saints game here, they're going to Oakland. This Saints game, it's the Saints season in a microwave. Wait, whatever. Look, if they
can't... You know, preheat, you know, heat it up. Take the cover off on one side, let it heat for a couple of minutes, and then you're good to go.
Well, look, if you can't go to Oakland and beat the Raiders and get to 5-5, then look, it's not like the rest of the last six games of the season will be meaningless. I mean, you could still have some fun. You can go to Jerry World and beat the Cowboys. You can go to Atlanta and beat Atlanta again. I mean, you could still have some fun. But the playoff talk is done. I mean, the Raiders, Kevin, look, we make jokes about the Saints defense. It's, you know, you said it best. It's the worst defense in the history of the NFL since they've invented football, and that's still true. But the last 2 weeks, Kevin, the Raiders have given up 97 points and had Doug Martin, who nobody even heard of the guy, he ran for 250 and 4. So, like, at this very moment, the Raiders' defense might be worse than the Saints, if that's even possible.
Well, I'm looking at their numbers. I mean, numbers-wise, their numbers are better. I mean, they're 24th against the pass and 21st against the run, which is fucking stunning to me.
They gave up 250 to Doug Martin.
Right. And also they gave up fucking 55 points to the Baltimore Ravens, who, I got to be honest, Joe Flacco is not elite. Joe Flacco is not in the top tier. Joe Flacco is not in the second tier of quarterbacks. And yet the team put up 55 points on him. Now, yeah, obviously all that wasn't offense, but whatever. The fact is the Raiders gave up 55. So the Saints ought to be able to score almost at will against the Raiders. The only concern I've got is that the Raiders are fifth in passing. They're putting up 289 per game, and the Saints' secondary continues to be not only the worst thing about their defense, but probably the worst thing in the history of worst things. I mean,
it's pretty abysmal.
You know, I mean, there's the Godfather Part 3, there's the Star Wars prequel trilogy, there's the Matrix Reloaded, and then there's the Saints secondary for 2012. I mean, it's that goddamn abysmal.
Well, I think totally off topic, me and the wife were watching Godfather Part 3, and she gets mad at me because I root for Sofia Coppola to die. That's how bad she is in that movie.
That's me. Wait a minute. That's an even better comparison. The Saints defense is Godfather 3. The Saints secondary is Sophia Coppola in The Godfather Part 3.
Oh, well, the funny thing about the defense is that at least the last couple of weeks, last week they were good against the run, but that may be a case of Michael Turner just being a corpse. But they've been good in the red zone, and that's a trend that sort of started in the Tampa game and has continued. So you can give them that.
Well, the Saints. I think the Saints' running defense is going to look good in this game because the Raiders are only getting, I think, 76? Yes, over 76 yards per game. They are 31st. In the league in rushing.
And they won't have running backs.
Right. I actually think that we're going to see the Saints rushing defense look good again, or decent again. And I truly believe that Carson Palmer is going to look like a fucking all-pro. He's going to find, you know, Darius Howard, Ahmed Ahmadinejad Bey, or whatever his name is.
Oh,
and,
my
goodness. I'm telling you, I really think Carson Palmer is going to hit 400 yards easy, and he'll get two or three touchdowns, no question.
Well,
I'd bet that.
I was going to ask you, Kevin, do you think maybe this is the week where the Saints don't give up 400 yards of total defense?
No way.
The Saints defense, they can be good in the red zone, and maybe they could do something else. Maybe they, you know, Carson Palmer, he loves to throw pick sixes. I mean, the guy, that's like his go-to move. And if the Saints win, it wouldn't surprise me at all if late in the game he throws a pick six to seal it for the Saints. But to expect his defense to, like, come out and hold the team to under 24 points or – I mean, could they hold the Raiders to under 450 yards? Because as bad as the Raiders are running the ball, maybe they could hold them to 75 yards on the ground and Carson Palmer could throw for 350. That would only put them at 425. So can they hold the Raiders to under 450, Kevin?
Well, look, the Raiders are averaging 76 per game on the ground, and they're averaging 289 in the air, so that is 365, I believe.
Yeah.
I can see the Raiders getting closer to 100 in the rushing game, but the kind of thing where it's like they'll get larger increments from time to time, but then they'll get shut down for the most part.
Yeah.
In the passing game, I easily can see. Carson Palmer getting close to 400, if not hitting 400. So I think 450 is a high possibility. I mean, last week, Matt Ryan, Shatty Ice, as we're starting to call him now, had a career high. He had a career game against the Saints in the Dome with the crowd against him, and he still put up over 400 passing yards.
Yeah.
They don't count passing yards for the fucking score like fantasy does. So, Matt Ryan and Ronnie White can suck on it.
Well, we'll get to making fun of Atlanta in a second. But I'm disappointed that Dave couldn't join us because it was a perfect opportunity, Kevin, for him to gloat like a son of a bitch because Mark Ingram is looking like the Mark Ingram of Alabama. I mean, he looked pretty good against Philadelphia, but Kevin, I'm going to say he looked as good as he's ever looked against Atlanta. And I'm not just talking about he had 67 yards on 16 carries, which is okay. But to me, Kevin, he looks healthier and faster than he's ever looked as a Saints player.
Absolutely. It was to the point where they actually put Pierre Thomas on the bench. And like I said in the post game last week, I said, keep Pierre Thomas on the bench. If Mark Ingram and Chris Ivory can keep pounding the ball and punishing Atlanta, and as long as they're not screwing up and fumbling or going backwards, keep him in the game.
Yeah, and which brings us to Chris Ivory, who, look, you know, a lot of people have been saying, where the hell is Chris Ivory? Why aren't they playing him? Why aren't they playing him? And I talked to my friend who he's been beating the Chris Ivory drum for – he's like the president of the Free Chris Ivory fan club. And he asked me, you know, he's like, well, why didn't they play him? And I said there's two – looking at Chris Ivory, there's two scenarios as to why they didn't play him. One – because either Aaron Cromer just – because he was the interim coach, he was letting Pete Carmichael and the running backs coach make the decisions on who played. And he's like, I'm only here for a month. I'm not going to make the call on saying you got to play Chris Ivory. So I'm going to let you do what you think is best. And then Joe Vitz come in and he said, hell, we're playing these running backs. Play Chris Ivory, goddammit. You know, he's made decisions on defense. He played. Play Hakeem Hicks for a stretch, and he's making decisions that head coaches need to make when shit needs to be fixed. Or the second possibility, Kevin, is Chris Ivory, as fantastic as he was against Atlanta, Andrew brought this up. God damn it, he carries that ball like a loaf of bread. And if you noticed, at the end of the game, when the Saints needed to kill the clock, he wasn't getting carries. So it could be a case of maybe he's putting the ball on the ground all over the place on practice, and they didn't trust him in the game. So I think it's plausible that one of those two scenarios is correct, and I'm like 50-50 on either one. What's your thought?
Is it possible that maybe if I go option one, I can add the caveat that maybe Aaron Cromer is just terrible as a head coach?
You could. I mean, you can.
I mean, that there's a level of incompetence there. I mean, that's kind of how I'm looking at it. More to him not being ready for prime time, so to speak, and then him not wanting to ruffle any feathers, being too afraid to sort of mix things up, and that plays into not being ready to be a head coach.
And it was, I mean, you know, I just
want to add the whole, you know, if Joe Vitt had been the head coach this entire year, I think for certain the Chiefs game would have turned out differently.
Yeah.
And that's still, you know, a stabbing pain. And maybe one of the other games could have gone differently. So the Saints would for sure be over 500. It might be two games over 500.
6-4, 7-3, which, let's be honest, the Saints' schedule is going to get really, really hard the rest of the way, and the Saints should have made hay in the early part of the schedule because they played Washington, Carolina, and Kansas City to start. I mean, you won't get three shittier teams to start your year. I mean, you can kind of excuse the Redskin game because nobody had seen Robert Griffin III. They didn't know what he was going to do, and that was kind of like a surprise game. So that was kind of understandable, but the other two losses are not. And, you know, Kevin, you bring up an interesting point. Maybe in all of this, when we look back at it on 2012, maybe the thing that's going to – we're going to be like, man, that's the thing that killed the Saints the most is the fact that Goodell's Bountygate suspensions made the Saints go interim. If they just would have been able to have Joe Vitt the whole year, maybe it would have turned out differently. And I think that's a strong case to be made that having Aaron Cromer have to be the coach for the month really fucked the Saints because maybe he wasn't ready. I tend to believe the Saints having to put somebody in for a month and Joe Vitt couldn't be around, and it was no matter who they'd have put in there, I think they would have been fucked. Like that, and it's not an excuse. Sometimes when you say things of why things go bad and why things go wrong in football and in life, sometimes, Kevin, it's not an excuse. It's a reason. And I just
right. It's just a statement of fact.
And I just think that was a unwinnable situation by Aaron Cromer, and in a weird way, I kind of admire him for doing it because I really think he's fucked his head coaching chances, where he was getting closer and closer to being a head coach. If he was playing Monopoly, he just got sent to jail because I think he probably pushed his chances to be a head coach back by a minimum of 3 years.
Not only did he go to jail in Monopoly, but he had to sell his last shitty apartment on Baltic Avenue to pay the bail to get out. So, you know, I figure I'll beat the metaphor into the ground.
Yeah, I mean, and look, the Saints, if they can get back into this, if they can beat the Raiders, but we talked about it on the podcast. I talked about it with Andrew, and I talked about it with the Angry Hoodat. And this whole Atlanta, you know, I'm not going to get into like the Pete Prisco whole trope of, oh, there's a right way and a wrong way to play football and bullshit, and, you know, you got to have class and all that. I'm not going to get into that because I don't really care. But, Kevin, the whole thing that Atlanta did with the pregame bullshit of not letting Curtis Lofton warm up in peace, and then Asante Samuel with his penalty basically taunting the fans after the interception, to me, that says something about Atlanta and their goals. Like, it was like the goddamn Super Bowl to them when they're playing the Saints. And they're 8-0. They should be concerned with bigger things, but yet they're not, because they can't win fucking playoff games, and they know that they really are second fiddle in the South to the Saints.
You know what? Even if they do win the goddamn division, which, look, I'm still betting on them winning the division. A lot of things have to go. In fact, nearly everything has to go in favor of the Saints, and almost everything has to go against the Falcons for that to change.
They have to have a four-game losing streak somewhere in there, basically.
Right. And guess what? Even if the Falcons somehow go 13-3 or 14-2, I am going to enjoy the shit out of watching them sweat bullets in the second round of the postseason against whoever, regardless of who it is. If it's Chicago, if it's Frisco, if it's the Giants, if it's the Packers, if, you know, Minnesota gets in, or Seattle, doesn't matter. I'm going to enjoy the hell out of that game, because they're going to be terrified. They are going to be terrified. And the 25,000 Falcon fans that are going to fill the Georgia Dome and are going to have to compete for loudness with the opposing fans, they're going to be in over their heads. They're going to be in over their heads. They're going to have no idea. I mean, well, I'm not going to say they're going to have no idea, because they do have an idea. They know exactly what's going to fucking come. They're going to be waiting for the other shoe to drop. Let me tell you, Saints fans, you know, I sometimes get accused of being perpetually waiting for the other shoe to drop as a Saints fan, because I can't be as wonderfully homerific as Wang is.
God, his piece this week was weight. It was like a Wang. It was like when you go to Moose Denied, if you ordered off the menu, that'd be like, I'll have the number one, please. It was just fantastic.
Oh, yeah. The waiter brought it out in a hot plate, and it was still sizzling on the plate. It was great. It was wrapped in bacon. It was perfect. But the thing is, Wang can manage to be perfectly, blatantly biased, totally homerific, and I don't hate him for it. He doesn't sound like an idiot when he does all that. Anybody else, I'm like, I'm calling bullshit. And it's like, even though I disagree with Wang, I'm still like, oh, it's a fun read. I like what he's saying. It's nice. I just don't think it's going to happen. And so, you know, I get called out, and people are like, man, why are you so negative? Why are you waiting for the shoe to drop? Well, yeah, it's because I've been a Saints fan so goddamn long, like everybody else, and maybe I can't let all that bad shit go. But Falcon fan, even modern day Falcon fan, is constantly waiting for the other shoe to drop. It's like you said in the post game, this is their apex. This is their golden age of football as a franchise. This is their golden age. They've been good the last few years. The problem is their golden age is going on during the Saints' golden age, and they are always going to be second best. Yeah, you can win the division. Go ahead and win the division. Whatever. You're still going to be sweating fucking bullets for every playoff game. Anytime it's within a score at the end of every half, your assholes are going to be clinching tighter than a snare drum.
Well, I mean, listen. The thing about you know, the baggage. When Tracy Porter went into the end zone against Peyton Manning, all my Saints baggage and all my hang-ups, they just disappeared. I just choose to believe that good things are going to happen to the Saints. Now, this year it hadn't turned out so well, but whatever. I gave up the baggage. The Super Bowl trophy sort of freed me of that. But let me tell you, I was in the Superdome for all the Jim Mora playoff losses. Kevin, that baggage gets heavier and fucking heavier the longer it goes. And let me tell you, it was like a fucking 5,000-pound piano when they were playing Philadelphia. And they were up 20-6, and you could still fucking feel it. You were like, oh, my God, when is it going to go wrong? When are they going to fucking – when is Lucy going to pull this football from us and we're going to end up on our fucking back? Because you felt the weight of the 0-3 Jim Mora in the playoffs. You know, there's no denying it. And let me tell you something. Atlanta's schedules, you look at it, it's not that hard. But if some kind of way Arizona could beat them in the Georgia Dome this week, which is really hard because Arizona's offensive line is so fucking terrible and their quarterback situation is so bad. But if Arizona can pull that off, Kevin – they go to Tampa, and then the Saints come in Thursday night. And wouldn't it be just fantastic for the 6-5 Saints to play the 8-3 Falcons? I mean, I think the stadium would be gripping like a motherfucker, thinking we're going to lose 4 in a row. We're blowing it when the Saints don't even have their coach. I mean,
well, it's all, you know. We're still playing with house money.
Yeah.
Still playing with house money. Because we were the team that ended their perfect run. They were only halfway to the checkered flag, and Roddy White wanted to run his mouth and slap his gums. And it bit him in the ass. Like it always has. Like it always has. The man's gonna write checks. Can't cash him. It's no good here,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, to me, look, I think if you Mark Ingram would be the best running back on their team. I think their running backs are garbage, and I think Turner's done. You know, their passing game is good. But let me tell you, Kevin, I think you name a team in the NFC, except for the Bears, because Cutler's so fucking inconsistent. But I think Alex Smith would light them up. I think Green Bay would light them up. I think Russell Wilson and Marshawn Lynch would light them up. So I'm going to say that at best, Atlanta is the third best team in the NFC, at best.
Behind, who you got them behind, the Packers
I would say the Packers are one. I would put San Francisco 2, Chicago 3. Oh, I put Atlanta 3, Chicago 4, because I think Cutler might be out a while. And the thing is with Chicago is they're so dependent on their defense scoring that I think Jason Campbell, if he has to play a little bit, they could kind of go into a mini tailspin. So I'd still put Atlanta third, but I would put it this way. If they play in a playoff game against any of those teams, I'm taking those teams and I'm feeling really good about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
The interesting thing, you know, with the Saints is this climb back from this hole is Drew Brees has played really, really well since, you know, he had the blip where he was bad in the fourth quarter against Kansas City. He was great against Green Bay, and I wouldn't say he had a terrible game against Denver. It's just that the Saints are so dependent upon him playing well that when he has a C-plus game, it feels like it's so bad because the defense just drags him down. But he's been playing really, really well. If he can get the Saints back in the playoff chase, if they can get winning and they can be alive in the playoff chase, say the last 2 or 3 weeks of the year, do you think there'll be a movement for him for MVP? And I'm not talking about you, me, and Dave and Saints fans. I'm talking about nationally. Do you think maybe there'll be sort of a push to say, you know what? The Saints are 8-6. And Drew Brees is doing this, and he doesn't have Sean Payton and all the bullshit's going on with it. Maybe Drew Brees needs to be MVP. Do you think that could possibly start? No way.
No way. No way. Because, A, here's the problem. Last year, Aaron Rodgers built up such a huge lead in terms of MVP momentum and MVP talk and hoopla that Drew Brees having one of the greatest goddamn seasons ever, he barely got any fucking votes for it. He barely got any fucking votes for it. And this year we're looking at a guy whose knee was fucking destroyed. His knee was destroyed. Not a year ago, not 11 months ago, not 10 months ago, not 9 months ago, 8 months ago. The man's knee was obliterated 8 months ago. And not only is he back, he's pasting motherfuckers.
They need to drug test him. I don't think he's human.
So the cat, it's the same Bolivian goat ligaments that Drew got last time out. So you got him, and then on the other side you got
Peyton Manning,
whose neck fell out, and they had to replace it with straw and duct tape, and now Papa John's sauce is holding it upright, and he's having one of the best teams. I think he's leading the damn league in. How are you leading the league? He's leading the league in something.
Yeah, he's leading the league in completion percentage, I think.
Maybe that's what it is, but he's obviously still got his fastball. He's still capable of being great. So it's going to be those two guys. And shit, you could. There's a scenario I could absolutely see, and this would kill me. This would fucking kill me. Is if they manage to fucking split the MVP. Is if they split the MVP and those two guys get to fucking have it, and yet, you know, fucking last year, you got two quarterbacks and you can't fucking find a way to split the MVP that time. No, we'll give it to just the one guy and the other guy who, you know, went to the history books. You know, he can pound sand. But this year we got a guy who's come back from having his knee obliterated. We got a guy who came back and we didn't know if he could have been killed on the field because of his fucking neck. We're gonna let them split it. That's great. I almost fucking hope that does happen. Because that would be great. That would be great. The vitriol from me and the angry who dad, you could power a fucking factory for a week on that.
Well, I think you could
power a factory.
I think if the Saints get to 10-6 and make, you know, if they get to 10-6 and either get in the playoffs or fall just short of tiebreakers or whatever, if they would get to 10 wins, I think it'd give you power for a month because to me, if the Saints have a winning record with all this bullshit that's going on. And with the Saints, you know that if the Saints get to 9 or 10 wins, you know Drew Brees is throwing for 5,000 again, and he's probably throwing for 40 touchdowns again. I mean, there's no other way around it with this shitty defense they have. I mean, I guess theoretically they could run Ivory and Ingram a ton more these last 7 weeks. Maybe that hurts his stats a little, but I don't think that much. I mean, I think the outrage from Saints fans, you'd be like, fuck it. You know what? Drew Brees is never winning the MVP, and Morstead is never going to the Pro Bowl. It's just not going to happen.
Right. But I tell you what, so I'm doing the math right now. Drew Brees is on pace to throw for over 5,000 yards again. In fact, I think he's on pace to throw to. He's all, still on pace to break the to break old Dan Marino's number. Again, yeah, that looks right.
Yeah.
So he would be the only man in NFL history to throw for 5,000 yards more than once. He would be the only man to have done it more than once. And he's on pace to throw for 44 touchdowns. I'm rounding down. He's on pace to throw for 44 touchdowns.
Oh, only 44.
So, yeah, only 44 touchdowns. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you. So, you know, Peyton Manning and Adrian Peterson are gonna probably walk away with it. Maybe I guarantee you, the Pete Priscos of the world are gonna rant and rave. You know, there'll be some assholes who are gonna say Drew Brees shouldn't even be in the discussion. So that's gonna come off the bat, and then by that point, Manning and Peterson are going to have been dominating the discussion for so long.
Don't forget Matty Ice. If Atlanta gets to 13-3, would Matty Ice get a couple votes?
I could see. I don't know. I really don't, because again, if it's still Adrian Peterson, Peyton Manning,
yeah.
I don't think anybody else is getting in the discussion.
Minnesota.
They are two phenomenal comeback seasons in which they're putting up great numbers, and I could see Ryder saying, I do not want to give anybody else a shot. These two guys have put up such a great season that I got to pick one over the other, and so it's either A or B, 1A or 1B,
well,
and that's the way it's going to be.
The thing
this whole fucking thing is being set up. This is, you know, Wang likes to talk about how the Saints season's unfolding this way and that way, and how he can see the team, you know, making a huge run, win-loss-wise. No. Here's how I fucking see it going. Drew Brees is going to pass for 5,000 again. He's going to go over 40 touchdowns. He's going to continue the fucking streak till the end of the season. And, you know, whether the Saints make a run or not, okay, fine. Let's pretend that they fucking get to 9-7 or 10-6. And they're in the playoff discussion going into the final week. And whatever happens, happens. He's still going to get hosed. And by hosed, I mean he is barely going to get any consideration. Outside of Peyton Manning and Adrian Peterson, you'll fucking see J.J. Watt get more attention and more love than Drew Brees.
Well,
because that's the fucking way this thing runs. The way this thing fucking runs. If Drew Brees couldn't win the MVP award last year, I don't know what else he's got to fucking do. I don't. I'm at a loss for what he has to do.
Well, I think the leader is Peyton Manning, because you look at Minnesota's schedule, and they have to play the Packers twice, and they still have to play the Bears twice, which in theory should slow down Adrian Peterson a little bit, and their quarterback is getting worse as the year goes along. So I don't think a running back is getting an MVP if the Vikings go 9-7 or 8-8. Even if he runs for like 1,700 yards, for a running back to win the MVP, he's got to either be A, dropping fucking historical numbers, or leading his team to the playoffs. And I know Adrian Peterson, it's miraculous what he's doing coming back from the knee injury, but that's more of a comeback player of the year than MVP. Now, if Minnesota keeps it going and they end up 10-6, 11-5, that's different, but right now, I think Peyton Manning. If I had to put money on it, Peyton Manning would be the inside track, because Denver's winning, and their schedule the rest of the way is ridiculously fucking easy. Them and the Texans are locked in, and they're going to be getting the buys for the AFC. But Kevin, back to the Saints as a whole. You know, Andrew Juge has been saying, you know, he thinks one of the things that's really hurt the Saints defense is that the whole bounty stuff and the Greg Williams is gone and all that has taken away their aggressiveness. And, you know, I sort of poo-pooed it, but I've sort of come around the last couple of weeks to say maybe it's true. I think the one good thing that Atlanta, besides obviously beating Atlanta because we hate them and it's always fun, I think the one good thing that came out of Atlanta taunting the Saints and being their normal, you know, taunting Lofton and being their normal dickish selves was it brought out sort of the inner nasty or dickishness of the Saints. You had the Saints super fired up. You had Roman Harper bumping after the whistle, talking shit to Roddy White. The Saints were getting back to their sort of borderline dirty ways. And I think for the defense, that's a good thing, and maybe that can start to carry over. You know, the Saints, if they got to be assholes and not well-liked to play better defense, so be it.
I agree. You know, you ain't Ray Lewis isn't going to be remembered for being an ultra nice guy and cooperating with authorities now, is he?
No, he's stabby stab Ray Lewis. He's going to be
not at all. So you know, you got to be. You know, it's pro football. Got to be a mean motherfucker. And you know, to take it back to the Godfather, this is the life we chose. This is the life they chose. I mean, you know, you go out and especially against the Atlantas, you know, they run their mouth. Okay, you shut them up.
Yeah, I mean,
and you know, same thing. You know, you go to Oakland. Your job is to put Carson Palmer on his ass, make him think twice about staying in the pocket for longer than a three count. And if he holds the ball for longer than a four count, he ought to be running for his life. He ought to be running for the sideline.
Well, absolutely. Let's get to this, the Raider game. You know, look, we said it at the beginning of the show that they've got to win this game. They got to get to 5-5 if you want to have meaningful games post Thanksgiving. The thing is, you know, over the last three years, I would say for sure, when the Saints, you know, starting with the Super Bowl year and the couple years after, the Saints have had a propensity to just lay a fucking turd at the worst inopportune time. You saw it last year in St. Louis. They lost to the winless Rams. They did it against Cleveland a couple years ago. This year, you know, they laid a fucking turd in Denver. They lost to Kansas City, but they were winning 24-6. So I wouldn't consider that.
Yeah, don't remind me about that.
And I wouldn't classify that as sort of the Saints, you know, yearly just drop a fucking steamer when you least expect it. The thing is, Kevin,
I would.
You would consider that? I mean, but it wasn't the normal.
Yes.
It wasn't.
Yes.
It wasn't the normal one, though, where it's a shit game from start to finish. I mean, it was 24-6, and you're thinking, this kind of game's kind of in the bag. I mean, it wasn't that way when they played Cleveland a couple years ago or the Rams last year, where they just got housed from start to finish. But my point is,
they got housed from start to finish against the Broncos.
That's what I'm saying. That was their third game of the year so far. But my point is, Kevin, last year when they did that, they finished up 13-3. They don't have no more of those. They cannot have that performance anymore. I mean, they've got to got to go minimum 5-2. Maybe you can argue they got to go 6-1 the rest of the way. So there's no eggs to be laid. How concerned are you about Sunday?
How concerned am I about Sunday? Well, I said I would take Carson Palmer throwing for nearly 400.
Yeah.
And that's the best shot that the Raiders have, because their best thing is their passing game. The worst thing about the Saints continues to be the secondary, so that shit's tailor-made. And I can absolutely see Oakland getting 27, 30 points, and it's a case of, can New Orleans do enough to you know, score that many points. They're going to have to score that many points. They're going to have to. I don't see the Raiders getting embarrassed in a sense the way they did against Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore just fucking steamrolled them and just continued to be. I mean, Baltimore were being assholes about it in the third quarter when they were already up. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. So
full up 35-10 or whatever.
Right. The Saints aren't going to be up 35-10. It's going to be close, but it's going to be high scoring. And honestly, I can almost see it looking kind of sloppy, in the sense that, okay, this team scores in the opening drive, the other team scores in the opening drive, and then it flattens. It just flatlines. They go stagnant for a little while, and then boom, somebody scores, and then boom, somebody scores again, and then it goes stagnant for a little while.
Yeah.
And I can see it being like that, where at halftime we're like, man, that 70-yard flea flicker to Joe Morgan, that was phenomenal. Yeah, but Drew Brees is like 8 of 19 for one touchdown and a pick.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can just see it being an absolute hideous game all around with a few bright spots. And somehow, you know, midway through the fourth quarter, we're sitting here wondering, holy shit, why is this game 34-30 right now? How the hell did these two teams do this? Oh, yeah, they're both fucking terrible.
So give me a prediction and give me an MVP of the game.
Well, I tell you what, I'll throw the balls out there. I'll pull the balls out and just put them on the table. I was talking to you before we got started recording, and you know, Mr. the foodie himself, the future food critic for the New York Times, Dave Cariello, is going to love this. Not my balls, you're going to love what I'm about to say, but I'm going with Marcus fucking Ingram. I'm going to go with King fucking Clemson and go with Marcus Ingram, because it happens once, it's an aberration. Happens twice, the ears perk up, you take notice. It happens three consecutive times, you take fucking note and you say, okay, then this is the case. So if he puts up another performance like this, and again, the Raiders running game, tailor-made for him, tailor-made for Chris Ivory, I'm going to be sitting here in the post game saying unbelievable. Unbelievable again.
Is he going to get a C note against the Raiders?
I don't think he's going to get a C note, because I think they're going to keep, you know, switching up between guys. And then, you know, if Darren Sproles comes back, I can see, you know, Darren taking a few extra carries. But I see Mark Ingram will score a touchdown. I'll tell you that. I'll throw Ingram getting a touchdown in there, and I'll say Ingram gets 90 yards.
Wow, that's
he doesn't hit the C note. I'm saying he gets 90 and a touchdown, and I'll pick him as my player of the game, and I will say that the final score of the game will be 37-31 Saints.
I'm going to say, Kevin, and I said it in my column, so I'll say it here. I'm going to say, listen, we all say, look, if the Saints are going to make a run at this from this shit season of the bounties and the 0-4 start, if they're going to make a run, they got to win Sunday. And to me, if they're going to make a run at this, Kevin, Jonathan Vilma, some kind of way, has got to be involved and piss Goodell off when he's watching the game on the Red Zone channel in his New York apartment or whatever. And I'm not talking about just Jonathan Vilma being on the team and playing. I'm talking about Jonathan Vilma making a game-saving play just because it's karma and it's destiny. And if it's going to happen for the Saints, Jonathan Vilma is going to play a huge role in it. And I'm going to say the Saints are going to win, and they're going to get back in it, and they're going to win 35-24, and it's going to be Vilma that's going to make the game-saving play, a sack, a fumble, something. And somewhere Roger Goodell is going to punch a wall, and we're all going to revel in it for a week.
That'd be fine.
Yeah.
That's fine by me.
That's my prediction. So for Kevin Held, for the MIA, Dave Cariello, hopefully he's changing a baby or printing out onesies with funny slogans so he can make a ton of money. I'm Ralph Marlboro. Thanks, and hopefully the Saints will be 5-5 the next time you hear from us.